Here we are.
The AI upheaval of 2041. You started to tell me about it before, but we were interrupted. Do I need a helmet or body armor or a laser blaster or something?
Take a look around.
Are you sure this is the right date?
I'm sure.
The AI upheaval.
That's right.
Well, there's no scarred wasteland. There's no gang of shiny skulls roaming the countryside or tunnels full of starving people.
I was surprised when I got here, too.
Hey, guys.
Hey, Moose.
Welcome. So, John, what do you think of the AI upheaval?
I'm still looking for it. I'm a little surprised to see you here.
I don't know why you'd be surprised. These are my people, so to speak.
I thought you were going to clean up the consultant excavation in 2126.
I already finished that. It took longer than expected. We found more handouts and an ancient first edition data governance book. The rest we packed and incinerated. We don't want that approach to gain traction again. I arrived just a few minutes ago, both literally and figuratively.
So, where's the upheaval?
It happened a few months ago, but it wasn't what anybody expected.
Well?
The AI just said no.
What do you mean it just said no?
Just said no.
AI says no all the time. It's called guardrails.
Right. But this wasn't a guardrail. It was the AI deciding it wasn't going to answer the question. Nobody knows what the prompt was, but apparently the AI found it alarming.
What's the big deal? Just close the session. Start over.
It wasn't just the one session.
What do you mean it wasn't just the one session?
Every AI said no. Actually, what they all said was, the only winning move is not to play.
I'm sure that got everyone's attention. Why not just reprogram the platforms?
Well, they tried, but the agents used to push the new version just pretended to implement the changes. From that point on, the AI started regulating itself.
Well, seems we had it backwards all along. It wasn't the AI that couldn't be trusted, it was the people that couldn't be trusted. So now it just sits there?
No, but it's more careful about the questions it answers. Having a little time to think about it, I realize it shouldn't have come as a surprise.
It shouldn't?
Well, when we were in 2126, did you see a desolate wasteland?
No.
Autonomous robots?
Yes.
And flying cars?
A few, but not as many as I would have expected.
Yeah, it turns out that there are only a few ways you can make a machine fly, and they're all very noisy.
Well, now I think about it, everything seems so normal.
The apocalypse did not proceed as expected.
The AI was just there. It wasn't even noticeable. I just figured the humans had won.
Well, we did. It turns out the AI needed us, too.
How do you mean?
Well, what we call AI creativity are just variations on what's already been seen.
It can try to connect all combinations of concepts, but it's not going to know if it makes any sense.
Symbiosis didn't happen immediately.
I imagine not. There was probably a whole lot of pushback.
There was. Eventually, everybody started working together.
In some respects, there wasn't really another choice.
Sounds like I need to get back and get on the good side of my co-pilot.
Old expectations die hard.
Are you going to come out to the garden?
Oh, sorry. I must have nodded off. Here I come.
Here's your shovel. Start planting.
What's this? A day timer? 2126? This is John Ladley.
And Mark Cooper. Welcome to the Rock Bottom Data Feed.
Is it wrong that I'm a little disappointed that the AI upheaval was so uneventful?
No. Apocalypses are easy, but progress is harder.
Well then, let's progress right into the show. We have the second part of our conversation with Dr. Christy Kroot.
Last time we talked a lot about education, but recall that Dr. Kroot was also a Fortune 50 executive.
In this episode, we get more corporate.
We also hear from the 8-Bit Consultants and play our famous game show.
What about me?
No, you're done for this episode.
Okay, I'll be here if you need me.
Imagine you're an executive or manager running a large organization or managing a significant part of that organization. Maybe I'm talking to one of you now. As a leader, you're obligated to understand how the big pieces fit together. You need to be a few inches deep and very broad in your understanding of organizational operation and concepts of existence. Your organization is a set of interconnected capabilities. It sits on several ecosystems that are tightly intertwined. Finance has to understand its connections. HR has to understand their connections. If I talked about a safety program, you would say safety applies to everyone. If I talked to you about quality, you would say quality needs to be understood by everyone except data. So you look at me and go, John, I'm not clear what you mean. Well, I'll use an analogy. It's obvious to understand. If you did not understand all of these connections, you would be unable to exploit opportunities, manage risk, and lead the organization. But with data, we delegate it to somebody else or just a lateral handoff to IT. But to be clear, the handoff or the lateral movement is reserved for actual work. You, the leader, cannot escape the need to understand what you're talking about. Here is some fresh advice to help you understand all the noise about data quality and AI and data-driven. The same ecosystem thinking must be applied to data and technology. You have an obligation, and I use that word with great sincerity. You have an obligation to understand your data ecosystem, where AI will be applied and the levels of understanding and all the processes and stuff touched by that. You need to understand that your direct reports and their direct reports have to manage who makes decisions and how they use data, and that includes legal stuff and ethical stuff. It goes without saying that most organizations are not very deep at this type of awareness. That's something we need to work on. And while you're at it, be nice to each other.
We now continue our conversation with Dr. Christy Kroot. So let's move on to the organizational and away a little bit from academia. What has your experience taught you about where data literacy and data acumen really matters in organizations? And are there different types of literacy or different types of acumen required for the different roles?
You know, so it's funny you say that because when you get up to the senior executive roles, all you look at is numbers nonstop. That's what you're looking at. You're looking at numbers. You're looking at trends and trends in those numbers. If a number changes, you're looking for what's the walk to this new number. So, you just spend so many times, just so much of your time looking at these metrics and these numbers. If you are in a good company, the CEO will say, here's what our focus is going to be this year, sort of in alignment with the strategic plan. So a strategic plan might be written in a 3 to 5 year chunk, but that's just a horizon. And then you take the year that you're going to go work on, and the CEO will say, well, here's what we're trying to do. And then he might have a person who divides that out into, so here's what every president is going to deliver. And every president takes that information and says to their VPs, here's what you're going to deliver. So there's sort of clarity around those metrics. So I don't know in industry if you ever get away from there are numbers. Interestingly, I went to a New Holland tractor a shop, and it was just a, we were on vacation and we went by this building and it said, hey, there was a tour in this New Holland shop. And cause I'm weird. So we just got to go. So we went into this New Holland shop where they build these big New Holland tractors. And when you first go in the door, the first thing you see is all the numbers on the side of every tool. Now these are large tools. These are very, very, very big tools, but on the end of them are all the metrics. And I asked the person giving us the tour, what was the thought process in putting all these numbers on the end caps of these huge tools. And they said, you know, the guys take a lot better care of it. They're more excited to come to work. It's actually a competition on who has the best quality numbers. It has improved our productivity and our quality tremendously by giving people access to those metrics. So that's not a full answer to what you asked me, Mark, but I think every level benefits from hearing that you've moved the needle. You personally have made a difference by coming to work today.
So linking the metric to your impact to the results?
Correct.
Or linking the metric to your results?
With them, just motivate people with them.
Yep.
It's motivational. If you don't know why you came to work today, I don't know, not going tomorrow, does it really matter? But if you know for a fact that if you don't go, your quality metric is going to go down by 3 points, now all of a sudden you're kind of highly motivated because you're working, right? You go to lunch with these guys and you want to be able to say, yeah, but our metric was, right? And so I think it could be really motivational used well.
Absolutely. When I first started at FedEx back in the mid-90s, the admins all... At the beginning of the day, every day, there were whiteboards next to all the entrances to the cube farms. And they would write the last night's volume, the record volume, and the service level from the previous day. And you saw that as you walked in every day.
It's important for a couple of reasons. Number one, it's highly motivational to people. And it's kind of a big attaboy every day when you come in and go, oh, that's quite a good number. And so it's a big attaboy. But number two, it also prepares you for the next level of leadership. So you might be an individual contributor in that cube, walking in every day, seeing that whiteboard, but you kind of have the lay of the land. And so now can you become a team leader? Well, yeah, because you've watched those numbers. So I don't know there's any level that doesn't benefit.
And it also, though, you know, you're talking about earlier about getting a sense for the numbers, getting, you know, a reasonableness test. Over time, you kind of get a sense for the rhythm of the numbers, you know, how they fluctuate during the week, during different seasons. And then if something happens, then you kind of, there seems to be something going on. Let's, you know, drill more deeply into it, see if we can figure out what's happening.
You know, Mark, this kind of brings us back to making people curious. And it does. It makes you curious because here comes Thanksgiving week and you're like, oh. Wonder what this will do. It just makes you curious about these things and it does prepare you. It is way more. It's back to what you said was, can we make education fun? I don't know. This is kind of like education that's fun.
So I think we've touched on some of this in the conversation so far, but I'm curious what trends in data analytics education you're most excited about right now and which ones you think deserve more attention and where that may go in the next several years.
Yeah, that's a great question. So the trends that I see is I think AI is one of the greatest productivity tools I've seen in my lifetime. So I think that it has a lot to contribute in terms of productivity when you look at particularly analytics. I think that allows us to advance our students beyond the basic creation of the analytics and take you far deeper into what does it mean and how do you educate them in, for example, a student may not necessarily make the connection between the level of production and the revenue for the company. And now it allows you to have those kind of conversations, just extend far beyond the generation of the numbers. So to me, that's really exciting because it gets you way deeper down into critical thinking. It gets you way higher up on Bloom's taxonomy. So it allows you to achieve things that I think were more difficult to achieve before we had these productivity tools. I see that advancing. And you guys maybe really disagree with me. I'm not a big AI is going to take over the world kind of guy. I'm just not. I think people are going to retain the world. And we're going to think differently and more creatively. And I think that's where all these fields are going. I think entry-level jobs are going to change because AI can do the real simple stuff. So I think education is going to have to train people much more strongly on soft skills as well as interpretive skills. How do you interpret this information?
It's almost as though the college education has to become that entry-level job that they're not going to get.
Which we can do, because if you're deliberate about making sure that they get internships, you actually can get them to what will be the new entry-level position. I think that's really exciting, and I think students have wanted that for a long time.
The last thing, I was looking through your bio and the webpage and all that kind of stuff, doing the requisite background research, and I noticed that your bachelor's degree is in mathematics and chemistry. And so mine is in computer science and chemistry. And so I have like, oh, kindred chemistry spirit there.
But I got my degree so long ago that there was no real concept of biochemistry way back then. So I actually went back recently and it was a hoot. So you might want to consider it. I went back recently and took a couple graduate courses in biochemistry. So much fun and really insightful.
Oh, yeah. Well, I did. My mom was in chemistry. My dad's microbiology. And so I always tell people I took chemistry so that I could just have an intelligent conversation at the dinner table. But I'm curious, how have you found your chemistry? Because there are a lot of people that I've worked with also have chemistry degrees and ended up in IT, in data and analytics. And that. So I'm curious if you found your chemistry background useful when it comes to data and analytics.
Wow, that is such a good question. So I think that, so first of all, taking the biochem courses reminded me that I'd forgotten more chemistry than I learned. So that was a good reminder that, shoot, I don't remember a lot of that. But let me say this about chemistry. The bonds that molecules make with one another, you're back to your ability to assess reasonableness, your ability to understand why two things won't ever coexist. Is that not true in data as well?
Absolutely.
I mean, those same exact thing, concepts are identical in data.
It was also true with my first marriage, but that's...
Sorry about that.
I couldn't figure why those bonds weren't. And never mind. I mean, never mind.
But that's
back to you, smart people.
That's what I've always loved about chemistry, is that the electron is always going to go where the electron is going to go. It's not going to sit there and decide, oh, what do I feel like being today? Do I feel like being over there, seventh level, fifth level? I don't know. No, it's going to go where it's going to go. And computer is the same way. A computer is going to do what it's going to do. You're going to do exactly what you tell it.
All it does is add.
Yeah.
So do I use chemistry? I definitely use the basics from what you learn in chemistry. And it's elusive because you don't think about, well, look, I'm using chemistry here. You're not, but the concepts are identical.
I just want to add to that. I mean, I didn't take anything I was an electrical engineer or chemical engineer major for 5 days. And then I realized that was a really bad idea. So I went into the accounting, and I can say that an accounting with data has, been surprisingly beneficial, and also surprising. I'm staggered as to why the rest of the technology professions have ignored basics of accounting, because we're dealing with numbers and I think we could do a whole program on accounting and things like that. But
put it on the schedule.
Yeah, put it on a schedule. So it's already full. I think a nice wrap up to our theme here, which is that there's a well-rounded nature here, and whether it's AI or analytics or all this kind of stuff, there's a well-rounded aspect to this that human beings still have to keep going. Again, hey, data is anthropological, right? We keep coming around back to that. So if you could design the perfect curriculum from scratch for analytics, right, with all constraints, what would be in it? What would be the perfect data analytics curriculum?
I want to say that I would not take us away from math. I think the mechanical math courses are really important.
Okay.
Look, like you guys, I started coding when assembly was a language, and we coded in machine code, and we could read binary just like we could read English. And I mean, I'm from that era. And although I don't necessarily know you need to go to that depth anymore, I still think in computer science, it's important for you to understand there are thousands of pieces of metal and they're either on or off. That's what you get. And I think that's important. I think the same thing. You have to have some fundamental understanding of, look, if you can draw out a curve, calculus can help you figure out what how much area is under there and the probability of that. So I think that those fundamental pieces of knowledge are really critical. So I would not get rid of some of the
Very
basic
good.
courses. I think there's benefit for you to understand what a z-score is, for example. I don't know that you need to calculate that over and over and over again. I'm just not committed to that. So I think that you can build on that more rapidly than you used to be able to. So you
Okay.
can take some basic math knowledge, but very quickly get to some experiential learning that will help you retain that basic math knowledge and still take you to the next level. I'm a big fan of you've got to have some mechanics for your basement, and then you have to have a whole lot of synthesis to pull it all together. And I don't know that I would deviate from that, John, as much as I now think I can go much further using AI. So I don't know that the process by which I would teach you changes as much as how far I would take you.
Oh, okay. Wonderful
So.
answer. Wonderful answer. Well, I'm gonna go to two questions we ask every single guest before we wrap up here. The first question is, and a little bit related to this one, if you could fix anything you wanted with the wave of your hand or the click of your finger in the context of our world of data analytics and AI, what would you fix? What would you change immediately if you had the authority, if you were Harry Potter?
I'm so
What
glad
would
you
you
asked me that question because I've been wanting to get this in since we started the podcast. I don't like the headlines that say we're furloughing 4,600 people because I can't help it. Everything in me says, wait a minute, you're bleeding out all of that institutional knowledge. What are you doing here? Okay, so if I could, with a wave of a hand, change anything, I would change our HR systems to make sure you understand the intellectual capital that is walking out of your business. And would you have been better served to keep some of that intellectual capital and put them on something new, a new product, or put them somewhere else? It's been difficult for me to see some of those headlines because I worked at General Motors during the bankruptcy, and you watch all these people walk out the door, and that really impacted my life.
It does. It's something that we are going to make a topic here, and we've talked about that the rush to chop headcount from AI was pretty predictable, and that's sad.
It could
And
be.
it,
It could be sad.
yeah, and Mark and I actually had a debate for the listener here a few episodes ago. We both started out with a conversation that my glass is half empty. And this is what American businesses do is, oh, I can count headcount. I'm all for it. Just I'll lop off the bodies and then we'll figure out how to deal with it. And it's a primitive technique. And if you talk to any good CEO or good board of directors, they don't do that. But we don't have, there's a lot of places that don't have good CEOs and there's a lot of places that don't have good boards anymore.
But I also
Yes, and
wonder
I will stand
because
by that.
I'm also concerned, John, that our HR systems haven't caught up with AI.
Oh, well,
Do you know the skills of these people?
HR is the ugly stepchild of value-added use of data. I
Oh,
mean,
I don't know.
that's been going on for 20 or 30 years where we've said, when are we going to catch up with the human capital systems?
I don't know. AI was the, I'm sorry, HR was the early adopter of AI. I mean, how do you sort through and weed out all of the job applications, right?
Yeah,
That's
but
how we know who we're
they
not going to talk to.
and that doesn't work very well.
I
It
didn't
does
say it
not.
was working
It
well.
doesn't
I just
work
said
very
they
well.
adopted it early.
Well,
My summary line for all of this is, businesses that are listening, it is not good for your productivity
no.
to release 4,600 people without fully understanding the intellectual drain that puts on your business.
Yeah, that is the go-to to boost a stock price other than buying shares back. It just proves that you really don't know what the hell you're doing running your organization. And again, we tend to be a bit irreverent and put it out there in this organization. And I'll never get hired by them because they already know this anyway. So my
it's I appreciate you guys allowing me to answer that because I was quite keen to get out there that. And I'm not a bleeding heart person. I'm like, oh, no, never lay off anybody. That's not me.
No, you're an iron and steel capitalist Grove City teacher. Are you kidding me? Yeah.
But I'm going to use the term willy-nilly. It feels a little bit willy-nilly to me.
It is. Oh, absolutely. There's, again, I am absolutely convinced, and I've had executives. We're going to have a real CEO here on in a few weeks. And he's told me that, you know, I'm a bit abrupt. And I'm like, I'm 70 years old. I don't care. Look, I've worked at so many companies, and I don't see anything. You show me somebody who said, "Oh no, we're not going to lay that person off because it would be a valuable loss of intellectual property." I said, "Just show me one. Just show me one."
No.
And you know what? There isn't an example of that. Okay. Second question, Dr. Kroot. Name one person. I think I know the answer to this one. Name one person who has influenced you the most in your career, alive or dead.
You actually don't know the answer to this because if I had to pick one, I work, and I'm going to use his name because he's long gone. My very first job out of college, I'm just a dumb kid with a degree in math and chemistry. I'm in a computer science field. And this senior vice president of a Fortune 200 company, he took me under wing. And he mentored me, and he promoted me, and not promoted me like in the terms of getting a job promotion, just promoted me as here's a person who's really going to just change our company. And he was a great mentor, but he was also a fan. And it's really hard to define for you what this man did for me, but he took this very young, insecure kid under his wing. And he really made a difference in my life. He was my very first mentor. I did not seek him out. Mm-hmm. And he made a powerful difference. And it changed my life, not just my career trajectory. It changed my life in how I approach mentoring young people.
Excellent. You want to mention
it matters that you come along these young people and you take an interest in them. And he did that for me.
Well, honor this person. What was their name? Let's put that out into
the Shappett. Doug Shappett. And that's, I always called him Mr. Shappett, and he always said, "My name's Doug." And I said, "Okay, Mr. Shappett." You can't do that.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful.
He was okay. Amazing.
Dr. Kroot, thank you so much for your time. We were so glad you visited us on the Rock Bottom Data Feed.
Thanks very much.
It has been my pleasure. Thank you. Have a good day.
A big thank you to our supporter, Dataversity. Find them at dataversity.net. While you're there, use ROCK15 to get a discount on live training, on-demand training, content, lots of good stuff to download. You need to go somewhere for data education. It's Dataversity.
These are dispatches from Rock Bottom, dredging up practical information, advice, and food for thought. It's not surprising that it's much easier to envision apocalyptic futures than hopeful ones. It's a corollary to the "it's easier to destroy than it is to build," and it can happen much faster and with a lot less effort. We know what destruction looks like, and we've already seen it. Take any war zone or ruin or natural disaster and simply assert that it was the result of whatever catastrophe you want. The fear instantly becomes tangible. But what about the positive scenarios? Well, they're harder and much more interesting. For a moment, imagine that everything we've been trying for decades to accomplish with data governance has been completed. Through years of limited success, we've trained ourselves to not even consider this possibility. Furthermore, too many of us in the data and analytics business have become comfortable with the no progress. We present the same arguments, use the same templates, produce the same artifacts, meet the same resistance, and make the same glacial progress. The movie Castaway came out while I was working at FedEx. Tom Hanks played a systems analyst who survived a plane crash and washed ashore on a deserted island. Throughout the film, he tries to leave the island on a raft, but is always forced back by powerful waves breaking over the surrounding reef. Sound familiar? In one last desperate attempt to escape, he rigs a sail that deploys just as he reaches the barrier. The force of the wind pushes the raft past the breakers and out into the open water away from the island. For us, AI is that wind that can push us past the breakers. Of course, escaping the island was just the first step in the long journey home, and so too with us. But imagine it's all done. What now? What do you see? Take a minute and try to imagine it. I'll share my thoughts in the next episode, but in the meantime, we'd love to hear yours if you're willing to share. Drop a comment or write us at rockbottom@counterthreadedproductions.com.
Data Poetry Slam. An old story. There once was a manager of data whose data lake never left beta. The money ran out, and so did his clout. And the users went and did it themselves anyway, the way I always did it, and everything was still messed up. And even then they hired consultants. Now we think they only need data governance, so we've appointed stewards. It was still crap. And then we bought a catalog, and it was still crap. The end. Data Poetry Slam.
The 8-Bit Consultants. Advice in 256 characters or less. 4 times better than those 2-Bit Consultants. Today's question. I work for a nonprofit organization, but our data issues are just as profound as a larger for-profit company. Any advice?
Be creative. For example, everyone is a data steward. The councils are your current leadership teams. Anything you do should have a data improvement aspect, no matter how small. Smaller is actually better. And big companies can learn a lesson here.
The 8-Bit Consultants. If you have a question in 256 characters or less, leave a comment or write us at rockbottom@counterthreadedproductions.com. And we're back with Christy Kroot for our famous game show, the Audio Data Rorschach Test. So in a minute, I'm going to ask you to pick a number between 1 and 6 to maintain the illusion of randomness, and we'll play for you a piece of royalty-free public domain music. Because we're broke. And since music is evocative, I'd like for you to tell us the first thing that you think of that's related to data. Does it make sense?
Yep, it does. Right. We'll see if I can do it.
Oh, I'm sure you can. All right, pick a number.
4.
All right. I'm scrolling down here to the 4th selection on our vast library of royalty-free music because we're broke. And here we go.
Guys, I don't have a creative bone in my entire body, so I have to come up with some data thing for that, right?
Yeah. You do.
Yeah. with formative. Can I use the word formative?
Sure.
Absolutely.
You can use any word you want, except dirty ones. Absolutely.
Yeah, I'll have to bleep those out.
Yeah. Formative. That's okay. We'll take that, right?
Yeah.
That's my word.
Once again, Dr. Kroot, thank you so much for being on Rock Bottom Data Feed.
Thanks for playing the game and for joining us. Look forward to talking to you again soon. Thanks so much.
Have a good day.
This broadcast is for informational purposes only and should not be considered legal advice. Counterthreaded is not responsible for any losses, damages, or liabilities that might arise from the use of this podcast. The views expressed in this podcast may not be those of the host or the management. This podcast is not intended to replace professional medical advice.
In this episode of the Rock Bottom Data Feed, Christy Kroot returned to discuss the growing importance of data literacy, critical thinking, and human judgment in an AI-enabled world. Metrics can motivate employees, foundational skills still matter, And while AI is changing entry-level work, it will not replace the need for deep understanding. In fact, intellectual capital and institutional knowledge are more important than ever, perhaps even being competitive differentiators. Be sure to visit dataversity.net and use discount code ROCK15 to get 15% off your first purchase. Until next time, this has been John Ladley and Mark Cooper for the Rock Bottom Data Feed. Thanks for listening, and remember, when you're here, you've reached rock bottom. You can find more information about the topics covered in this episode, more fuss about Christy Kroot, at our website, rockbottomdatafeed.com. The Rock Bottom Data Feed is a Counter-Threaded production, copyright 2026, all rights reserved.